Brothers and sisters, Sunday school scholars, Deuteronomy chapters 29 and 30, they deal with the principles of the covenant, that is, the conditions that will ensure Israel's continued occupancy of the land, which includes the benefits of obeying and the penalties of breaking it. These have already been set forth by Moses to the nation as it stood on the eve of entering the promised inheritance. There only remains the formal endorsement of it by the people. So it is that act, the endorsement, and the accompaniments to it that are the subject of these two chapters. Chapter 29 can be broken up into five parts. First, we have an introduction, verse 1. Secondly, in verse 2 through 9, the people are exhorted to keep the covenant on the grounds of personal experience. Third part would be who is involved in this covenant. Furthermore, we go to verses 14 through 17. It also extends to those that are unborn. And the last 11 verses deals with the punishment resulting from breaking this covenant. So the covenant described is not a new one. It is a renewal, which we have already talked about, of the one given to the people at Horeb. And it's now, once again, reaffirmed by Moses to the generation about to enter the land. The covenant was originally confirmed with sacrifices at Horeb, Exodus 24, and is now renewed. If Deuteronomy outlined a new or additional covenant, it would have required further confirming sacrifices, but there is nothing recorded of such an instance. The Bible knows of only two covenants, one of law, the other of grace. The covenant of law, as all references to it reveal, was made at Horeb, and now it is reaffirmed by Moses to the generation about to enter the land. The other covenant was the covenant of grace, proclaimed to Abraham and confirmed through Christ, as we're told by Paul in Romans 15:8. Verses 2 through 9. Moses warns the people of the tendency of the flesh to go astray, which Brother Richard yesterday exhorted to us about. Moses also exhorts them to continuously keep in mind the terms of the covenant. How true this is, even in our day. It's so easy for us to become complacent. Consider the personal experiences of the Israelites. In Deuteronomy 8, verse 4, we read, "Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years." We are told that during the period of 40 years, their garments were miraculously preserved from decay. I'm blowing away up here. They were reminded that God recognized that they had need of these things. It's Matthew 6, verse 31-32. So God provided it. However, they were also taught to use these things that God gave them, and not to waste them. The preservation of their clothing was a huge contrast to the wastefulness of today that disposes of clothing, not because they're worn out, but quite often to satisfy fleshly vanity in acquiring something new. Although it is quite legitimate to enjoy the bounties which with God has placed in our hands, we need to avoid going to extremes in wastefulness. Verses 10 to 13. We're now going to see who this covenant pertains to. The people of Israel are commanded to enter into the covenant of Yahweh in faith and with enthusiasm. Two very important nouns, faith and enthusiasm. Only by doing so will they prosper in the land they're about to enter. In verse 10, we read, "Ye stand this day of you before Yahweh your God." "Ye stand this day, all of you, before Yahweh your God." The use of all shows that the covenant is a national one, and not just a personal. All are involved, whether or not they individually endorse it. As the covenant was a national one, it not only included the adults in the existing generation, but it also included the little ones, strangers who resided in Israel, as well as the lowest ranking servants found among them. In contrast to the covenant of grace, which is conditional upon individual acceptance of Yahweh's truth, the covenant through Moses was, as I said, national, and therefore binding upon all, both young and old. We go to verse 15. "But with him that standeth here with us this day before Yahweh our God." This verse involves the unborn into the national covenant made with Yahweh. Earlier in this chapter, Moses has reviewed the various classes of people assembled to confirm the covenant with Yahweh. Now he includes unborn generations who hereafter shall take their places in such acts. He warns everyone against promoting evil in their hearts and presuming to avoid the requirements of the law. He warns that the sinful shall be separated for punishment, verses 18 through 20. The land of a sinful tribe shall be overthrown as a result of a curse, verses 21 through 26. But he also adds words of mercy and makes serious appeals to the people to choose life and not death, which we are told about at the end of the chapter 30. We'll get there. So, looking at verses 18 through 20 a little bit closer, it can be a topic for an exhortation by itself, so I would like to focus on just the second half of verse 18. Lest there should be among you a root that beareth gall and wormwood. Here we have a reference to false doctrine. Its root may be hidden from you in the earth, or not seen of man, but its fruit can be disastrous. The Apostle Paul describes a root that beareth gall and wormwood as an evil heart of unbelief departing from the living God, Hebrews 3:12. For it is to Moses' word he obviously refers. The expression clearly relates to false doctrines and idolatrous practices, which acts like a spiritual opium and the intoxicating bitterness of wormwood. And I will leave this with a little request for the brethren for more in-depth explanation. There is a lot to be said. In verse 23, we read that, "And that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, that it is not sown, nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admon, Zeboim, which Yahweh overthrew in his anger and in his wrath." Israel is warned that the land which then was described as flowing with milk and honey will not only be neglected, but afflicted. It would become like the land surrounding the area of Sodom and Gomorrah, completely arid, which happened when the people went into dispersion after the Roman invasion. The trees were cut down for war purposes, and hence erosion took over to make the land desolate. During the era of Turkish domination, there was a tax placed on trees, the effect of which was to strip the land even more. Areas such as the valley of Esdraelon, or as known today, Jezreel Valley, were afflicted by swampy conditions that bred malaria and made the cultivation extremely dangerous for anyone who might undertake to cultivate it. The Israelites who returned to the land had to restore its fertility, where areas affected by erosion had experienced bare rock. They had to replant trees, drain swamps. So, we can... Verse 28. And Yahweh rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation and cast them into another land, as it is this day. Yahweh rooted the people of Israel out of the land because of their wickedness, but it is his intention, in fulfillment of the covenant made with David, to thoroughly plant them. That, and we read in 2 Samuel 7, verse 10, they may dwell in a place of their own and move no more. The promise is, neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them anymore, as before time. This takes us to chapter 30. This chapter consists of the third part of the fourth discourse of Deuteronomy. The key thought is that of choice. They shall have life who choose it. This chapter can be broken down into three parts. We have the first 10 verses where the divine mercy promised the repentant. Second part, 11 to 14, which covers the terms of the covenant made easily accessible. And the last five verses is an exhortation to seek life and goodness. After the outpouring of curses, there will follow great blessings. The people will respond to the invitation to return and will be gathered back into the land. In the lands of their dispersion, the people would meditate their fallen state, recognize the cause of their disgrace, and, as in Egypt, cry unto Yahweh for help. Yet Yahweh hath not cast off his people, Romans 11:1, and will open his ears to their cry. In verse 4, the term uttermost parts of heaven relates to all lands under Gentile rule. All lands. They will be sent forth under the supervision of Elijah to proclaim to those Jews remaining outside the land of promise that their Messiah has returned, and to gather them back to the land. In verse 6, we read that, and Yahweh, thy God, will circumcise thine heart, and the heart of thy seed, to love Yahweh thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. A truly circumcised believer does the will of God instinctively, without constant prompting, because the work of the law is written in his heart. Romans 2:14. However, circumcision is an agonizing process, particularly for an adult. Moving forward to verse 11. For this commandment, which I command thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. The terms of the covenant are not inaccessible. The heart might refuse it, the mouth might refuse to acknowledge it. Yet, in fact, Yahweh had made it as simple as possible, consistent with his purpose to change believers by his word. Man has himself to blame if he does not grasp its meaning and obey its precepts. And in the last five verses, Moses reveals the benefits of obedience. Yahweh makes clear the alternatives, It is for man to make the decision, fully recognizing that the consequences are certain. To love Yahweh in the way expressed is the first and great commandment. The manifestation of such love, declared Paul, was the fulfilling of the law, Romans 13:10. In conclusion, verse 16 gives us the way of life. Love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, and his statutes, and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply. And the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. And the Apostle Paul reaffirms that godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and that which is to come. 1 Timothy 4:8. The choice is ours.